You have had quite a bit of the material of Scientology written to you and explained to you. You found out quite a lot about it. But if these were just a series of arbitrary definitions so that we could process, they'd be worthwhile, but they wouldn't be very valuable. Let's take up this business yesterday. Miriam's suddenly discovered that the word symbol, as given in the English language, means a substitute for. Now, that's a very definite English definition. And instead of meaning this, she found out it meant mass, meaning, and mobility. And this was a shock. Of course, it would be. Until she examined it further and found out that mass, meaning, and mobility were a substitute for the thing, which was life. And all of a sudden, I don't think I'm drawing a long bow to say so, her understanding of Scientology in just this one little point broadened somewhat, right? If you can't get that kind of a spark out of every one of these definitions, if you can't get a broadening of your understanding of life out of these definitions, then there's something you've missed about one. Got it? We are in the very happy state that there's doggone little added baggage riding along with us now. Now, you've seen me actually throw away with wild abandon, although you haven't noticed it, a tremendous amount of stuff. Man, we were accumulating there for a long time until we were, it was up to the plimsoll mark of Indian Ocean summer. And we've just been strewing the wake with stuff. Look at all you don't have to know about engrams. Well, that's just one of many. Overt act motivator sequence isn't very important. But sure does explain a lot of behavior. But we don't use it very much in processing. More important than that, the whole book, What to Audit, got thrown into the wake. Although today people read that with great fascination. Because it explains what these preaklers have been up to all this time, see? What they're dramatizing. So it's a piece of understanding, but we don't use it in processing. And similarly, there's a tremendous amount of bric-a-brac. Well, if all of this throwing away has been going on, what has been kept aboard? Because there still is a small amount of cargo in Scientology, which is the more important factors. Scientology, even though it now resembles a Missouri steamboat, a Missouri steamboat, by the way, was a remarkable thing. Tell a story about a steamboat pilot who got one of these Missouri River boats in the early days, well up the Missouri. Passenger and the captain and the pilot were about all the people there were aboard. Of course, a couple of guys to stoke the engines. Passenger woke up and he looked around and he saw nothing but prairie in all directions, not a sign of water. Not a sign of water this morning. And he saw the captain, and the captain looked awful bleary-eyed. The passenger was bleary-eyed. They'd both been drunk the night before. And the captain said, "That's right. We're 18 miles from the river. Goddamn pilot got drunk last night, and there was a light dew." Now, we almost resemble this wonderful state of affairs, except nobody's drunk. We can travel on a light dew. This is what you're studying right now. It's not very much. But by golly, given a whole and one's understanding of the data which we still retain, an auditor can now get awfully puzzled. He can get very upset. This is certain. Let's take first and foremost one of the early basic words in Dianetics, aberration. The actual English derivation of the word means a crooked line, an aberration. It's a term actually which comes from the science of optics. A lens is aberrated if it twists the lines out of plane where they belong. A lens has as many aberrations as it twists the light out of a straight line. Look, cause, distance, effect, straight line between, the introduction of a via. Get that whole philosophy? All right, it's right there in that word aberration. We say somebody is aberrated. Well, is there an absolute state of aberration? No, because you could just keep winding up and winding up. But is there a theoretical non-aberration? People are, yes, very definitely. It would be cause, distance, effect, known cause, known effect, straight line between, and no vias. And that would be non-aberrated and would be non-aberrative. Well, this is an interesting thing here. Let's take the boy. He knows he's right there. The pre-clear does. He knows the wall's right there. And he reaches out his hand and he touches the wall. Well, he's coming awfully close to cause, distance, effect, isn't he? And we make him go around, cause, distance, effecting, until we finally get him in a state where he recognizes that there's no via between him and the wall. Many of the pre-clears that you have will stand up in front of a wall and can see that there's something between them and the wall. Old masses of energy, all kinds of things and stuff, and they will actually reach too deep, reach too shallow. It's just like the pilot who tries to land 20 feet under the ground or 80 feet above it. He can't reach his effect points anymore. Well, you'll see this manifested in very, very many ways. He can't arrive, for one thing. He'll start a task and never finish it. See, he knows there's so many vias. Do you ever run into anybody that they'd start to... did you ever ask anybody, can you please fix this tire? They're there. They got a couple of tire irons and so forth. And then they realize they have to have a jack, and they go find the jack, and they put that on it. And then they realize that they probably have to have a different type of lug wrench, a fancier one, and that one doesn't work very well. It works a little bit, you know. So they have to go and get another lug wrench. And then they realize by this time that they're wearing pretty good clothes, so they've got to go and put on some different clothes. And then they look over the spare that they're going to put on, and they decide that this needs some repairs first, although it looks all right to you. And they keep accumulating data until at last they start accumulating excuses, and there sits the flat tire, on and on and on. They are just departing on vias that keep them from arriving. And the more vias they hit, the less they're going to arrive. You get a government, a bureaucracy. The reason we object to a bureaucracy is because it's via, 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 and it never gets any place. What men are trying to do is make the system responsible. The system has got to be responsible, not the individual. And if this keeps going, you have a very aberrative state of affairs because you're looking straight at an aberration. Aberration means no more, no less than a great many vias. Now, did it say a great many necessary vias? Unnecessary vias? No, it just said a great many vias. For instance, here I said, talking to you, we have dispensed with a great many vias. There actually is a possible via on this line. There's a tape. All right, but this still has been unviaed down to a minimum. You'll notice, however, that every once in a while somebody objects to tapes. I just don't like these tapes. Well, they just so it's a via. It's obviously a via. So to some degree, it's aberrative, some slight degree. Now, it just depends then on how much deaborative material there is on an aborative tape. This is sort of a contest between these 2 points. All right. Now we look at this aberration. If we understand aberration very well as a word and as a definition, if we understand it, and I'd just be able to quote it, if we understand this thing, we'll understand an awful lot about what's wrong with Joe Doakes and Bill Frud. We also understand what's wrong with the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist is sitting there looking at the patient, and he's got to go find an electric shock machine. Da! And the electric shock machine doesn't make anybody well. He's just putting some more vias on the line between the person and his own body and anatomy. But there the psychiatrist sits, you see, and there the patient sits. Now let's take an E-meter. Actually, what was originally called an E-meter is going to be called shortly a physiogalvanometer, which word is trademarked by the HASI. A physiogalvanometer just happens to be a happy combination of words that has never been used before, so it can be trademarked. And the main difficulty with the old E-meter was that the fellow who was making these things just couldn't bear to arrive or something, and we would have a conference, and there had to be certain things put on this E-meter to make it work, or certain things taken off to make it work, and so on. And I'd get this thing pretty well streamlined and agreed upon with him, and then son of a gun would go back and put on 2 more dials until we got something that was all dials and no meter, or all meters and no preclear. Had just got to be so many vias. In the first place, it was a big via between the auditor and the preclear. Big via. But it had its purposes. It was actually merely a substitute for communication lag. That was all it was a substitute for. Now that we understand communication lag, our own understanding came up. What possible use is an E-meter? Well, the funny part of it is that it does have a use, but not in auditing. The physiogalvanometer today will be produced probably by the HASI or the HDRF, for the purpose of personnel counseling. And it will be used to check employees' references without going into the vias of more letters. We'll just ask them, why'd you leave the job? And he says, well, I just got tired of it, and the needle goes wham, you see. And you say, you mean you got fired? And the fellow says, well, yes. This, by the way, gets around the fact that many employers will give an employee a reference. A good reference, just to get rid of them. All right, so we can really then, with cyanometric testing, turn around and with this physiogalvanometer, give a personnel counselor a very, very valid tool. We are going to indulge in, just as an experiment, a little bit of personnel counseling. We're going to start an employee certification service. And we're going to give anybody whose references are in good shape, or who is in good shape and who can do the job, a little card that says so. And in addition to that, if they can't do the job, we're going to give them group processing for the same fee as their testing. See, this is a very direct line to raise the employability and employment capability of the country at large. If anyone wished to start this up, it could roll. We might start it up and let it roll. The physiogalvanometer, though, which will be used in order to accomplish this, doesn't even vaguely resemble, in its parts, circuit, or anything else, the old E-meter. It has 2 lights. It has a switch. The switch says on and off. And 1 light is red, and 1 light is green, and they burn in varying degrees of intensity. So that the needle is really falling on an old E-meter, you'd get that thing burning red, 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 red. And if it were rising, you would get green, 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 green. And if it were neither rising nor falling, but were stuck, both lights would be out, regardless of what the tone is. Nobody ever made sense out of tone, anyhow. So this will be the personnel counselor's physiogalvanometer. Have a red light and a green light, It'll have an on and off switch. It'll have a plug that you plug it in. It'll have one electrode that the person holds in his hand, and that will be the end of the meter. There's nothing more there. No other adjustment, no other dials, nothing. It'll probably look like a desk ornament. Probably look like a nice little desk clock or something of the sort. Now, that's taking the Vias out of the line. The only reason we're giving it to the employment counselor is because he doesn't know his Scientology. So he needs something to give him the word. Actually, a Scientologist can be very ruthless on personnel counseling. He doesn't like to cut his ARC down to the point that he would have to cut it down by reason of talking to people. He just doesn't like to cut it down this far. He likes to believe for the best. And he knows doggone well that that person with that neuritis, ding, below two, he knows that. Experience will bear it out. He doesn't need an e-meter to tell him this person, tell him lies about his last employment. He just look over the physical condition of the individual and tell you whether or not he had the straight dope. Easiest thing in the world. If he really wanted to study it from this angle and recognize exactly what he was looking at, he could do this. All right, let's take this word aberration. And let's find out that the greatest via in the world is an unknown. That's the greatest via there is. All right, if the greatest via is an unknown, therefore, the more mysteries that you impose on auditing, the more mysteries you impose on living, the more aberration there's going to be. The more data, which the more data which I would hold in my back hip pocket on the subject of Scientology to secure it for the HASI, the more data which I would withhold one way or the other, or would misprint, or not print totally of, the more aberrated you could expect this science to be. Science is not aberrated, for the good reason that when I get a hold of a datum, I just hand it to whoever's handy. But you'll find groups where the leader of the group is withholding data. And boy, is that an aberrated group. Do you know, nobody realizes why we made it necessary for every member of an authorized group, every real member of an authorized group, to be a member of either the HDRF or the HASI. You know why we did that? It's so that nobody could sit there in the middle of that group and withhold any data. In other words, we had a communication line to all the members of the group. And therefore, if anything important was being released, it would be released to all those people. But it's withholding data, or twisting data, or perverting it in some fashion, leads to an aberrated condition in the society. One of the most aberrative things in the society, by the way, right this moment, is a newspaper. The newspaper is specializing in one tone level. Emergency disaster. It doesn't match the tone level of a great many people in the society. Furthermore, it does not report its news accurately. And even after the news has been reported by a reporter who was already repressed and didn't understand what he was looking at anyhow, it's then edited to fit the policy of the paper. And today you find the newspaper world going very steeply out of communication. This is almost an impossible thing to recognize unless you actually go into a newspaper office today. Many of us have had experience with the press. Many of us have worked for the press, one way or the other. And we found the press at times could be a very great adventure. And that reporters very often were very crusading people. And that a lot of good has been done by the press. But we don't, that isn't the condition which obtains right this minute. It was with great shock that my attention was suddenly jerked to this circuit that was going on right now just a short time ago, and I tried to discover what the score was and found out that the reason why a press release couldn't be issued to the press had nothing whatsoever to do with the press release, but had a great deal to do with the fact that most of the sections of the country today are depending on a thing called a teletype. And this teletype is spreading It's little ticker tape far and wide, and what comes off the teletype is news. This is not at all reasonable. And they've gotten so dependent on this darn teletype and news services that are someplace that I don't think there's any beginning on the teletype. I think that the boys up at MIT developed some kind of a brain machine that simply dreams up some news, you see, at opportune dates, consulting an almanac or something of the sort, and shoots it through the teletype. We don't have today an accurate picture through the newspapers of what is going on in Europe. We have a highly, wildly colored account of what them commies are up to. I've seen no news stories. I've seen a couple in a magazine. But I've seen no news stories today that told us accurately that Germany was trying to get on her feet. Actually, Germany is trying to get on her feet, desperately. If the American people understood it a little bit more about Europe and got some news through from Europe instead of colored propaganda, we might have a greater responsibility for that very small section of the world. It's a very tiny section of the world. You could lose Europe three times in Texas. Tiny section of the world, not very many people in it, to tell you the truth, this thing called Europe. Why we didn't annex Germany, why we didn't square away this hot bomb that's sitting over there, as more now know. We went over and took our government. We took the government of Germany, of half of Germany. We're busy governing it now just as though it was Minnesota. And yet the Germans themselves are getting on their feet with what? With resentment. Why resentment? Because we have, to some degree, repressed their initiative. And we're just cooking up another hot spot of resentment. But it is up to the news today to report what is happening in the world, not what some political party wishes people to believe is happening. And so we introduce this colored via. And actually, we mean when we say propaganda, we mean there is a via on the line. The word itself is colored today. So we say propaganda aberration. Same words, equal magnitude. Not equal, similar magnitude. Propaganda, aberration. Unless people get the straight story about what's going on, they can't solve any problem. The way you keep a problem from being solved is to introduce enough quirks in the line. Now let's take Freudian analysis. Here sits a preclear. Patient. Should be a preclear. He's a patient. And the analyst goes and pours to him a lot of interpolation. An analysis. I know the analyst will very often tell you that they've stopped evaluating, but then a lot of them have read Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health. And by the way, a recent series of letters to analysts brought back quite a few responses on the subject of, good heavens, I didn't know I could be trained in it. How much is it and where? And about Dianetics. They've been using it. God, I tried to train some of them. Lord knows what they're doing in calling Dianetics. But they introduce a via into the fellow's bank by evaluating for him. Now, so does Mama introduce a via into a little kid's bank, till you'll find many are pretty clear in this condition. You'll say, now, what happened? Where were you when you were about 4 or 5? What happened during that period? And this person will give you the most glib response you ever listened to. And then you would say, if you were very wise to this particular fact, you would say, now, are you remembering that? Well, yes. Well, what are you remembering? Well, my mother told me all about it. Well, now, how about you remembering what happened? That's impossible. That's all blanked out. Childhood memories, when blanked out this thoroughly, have been blanked out by somebody else evaluating for the child. And here we have evaluation now in auditing up to its full stature. So we don't evaluate for the preclear. Why? Because we will introduce a via into the line. We will keep that line from being straight. We will bend it through ourselves back to his recognition. And if we have done this, then good God, what have we done? This individual is not then capable of stringing a straight line between cause and effect. We've given him a via. You see? So evaluation is just a via, and evaluation is aberrative because it introduces one. Now, you see what all comes out of this word aberration? And a very interesting, long line of understandings come out of it. My instruction of people, of you, might be considered, to some degree, a via. Oh, it very definitely is. It's a justified via, however, in my viewpoint, because nobody's dug it up for the last 2,000 or 3,000 years that I know anything about. And it was about time somebody did. And my instruction of you is justified only to this degree, that after I have called your attention to something, you, as you go along the track with auditing and living, will all of a sudden string the straight line yourself and say, hey, what do you know? So that you knew it and do it first analytically, almost superficially as a subject. And then suddenly you run into this thing. You'll string a straight line. Zip. Sometimes you'll even feel a little electric spark because you can just knock out all the vias on the line, you see. And suddenly you've got a grip on this particular datum. And you say, gee, that lines up real nice. And the next thing you know, you're running a cause-distance effect on life instead of a cause-via. But think of the number of vias one might have had before I started digging this stuff up. You must have had tremendous numbers of vias, you see. So I'm actually short-circuiting a tremendous number of vias. And then I leave it up to you, with your experience with pre-clears, with life at large, to short-circuit the remaining vias. You see that? So that your understanding should eventually become very clean and clear on these. But it won't if I keep being very powder puffy on the subject of giving you the straight definition. I mean, if I keep saying, well, it's all right, it's just you probably understand it, and so on. If I don't really try to get you to get to the exact meat of a definition, of it, just exactly what I'm talking about, then all these various words which I use will remain as a definite via. My effort to get you to a straight definition and recognition of it is simply an effort to get you to unvia, to take the aberration out of the subject. See that? All right. By the way, this particular glossary was, which I'm not going over with you in full, I'm just telling you about it, was compiled by Burke. And he dug it up out of a lot of copy here and there and wrote it up because we were in a very bad crush to get through to the printer with Creation of Human Ability. And he wrote it up and sent it through. So many of these definitions had to be just extrapolated by him at that time. It's not that I'm taking no responsibility for it, but I'm telling you that you may have a briefer series of definitions. These are all very acceptable definitions, but you may have a briefer definition or a briefer series of definitions, a briefer glossary, with that book on its second or its third printing when I get around to writing one. I write up a glossary every once in a while, every 6 months or year or something like that, I'll write up a glossary. The last two glossaries which have been published, however, have been written by other people who have taken the meanings usually directly from my work or lectures. All right. Acceptance level, there's a whole PAB on this subject. One of the more fascinating subjects. But rejection level is its companion. And as accept-reject is a very, very high echelon process. You should understand something about acceptance level. Therefore, when somebody understands something about acceptance level, you better had. Because I tell you that a pre-clear who sits down there and is playing a superficial game with you, and this person has a very, very bad neuralgia. This person has glasses a half an inch thick. This person has a pretty bad comm lag, and this person says to you, well, I could accept all Packard cars and fur coats and diamond rings. Ding, ding, ding. This person can accept garbage cans, sewers, decayed bodies, and that's about it. When you get yourself a good command of acceptance level, I'm afraid you can look holes through the activities of man. And his rejection level will explain to you a lot of rebuffs that you have had and have seen. Just why? And that's it. It's acceptance. What is their rejection level? What is their acceptance level? Now, the statement here, the acceptance level of a pre-clear is the condition in which a person or object must be in order that the pre-clear be able to accept it freely. It's not a bad definition if you know exactly what it means and what acceptance level means. Acceptance level is simply that level in existence which Q&As with that level in existence. You got a duplication here, of course. If you find the pre-clear at the sewer level, then Q&A, he'll accept sewers. You got the idea? If he's really out of Cadillac, you know there are a lot of people around driving Cadillacs whose acceptance level is a two-wheel donkey car? And you know they have more trouble with that car? They just can't understand why they get into all that trouble with that car. There's a social acceptance level. There's a social acceptance level. What a person is expected to accept. He very often finds himself completely at war with what he can really accept and what he's expected to accept. And if we get this, we will understand all we need to know to get the war between social man and individual man. If there is a war, it is between these two levels. Social man is expected to reject certain things. He's expected to reject foul play. He's expected to reject disloyalty, infidelity. He's expected to reject this and that. He's taught carefully to reject an enormous number of things. And these may not be his rejection level at all. His rejection level may be loyalty, courage, decency, fidelity. That may be his rejection level. These things may just be fingernails on the blackboard to him. These qualities, any good quality of the society may just be horrible to him. And someday along the line, he does an unsocial act. Why? Well, he just break down, that's all. He just can't stand this tension any longer. Being told with every hand that he should be honest. You'll have somebody talking to you sometime about how honesty should apply or shouldn't apply. You know, whether or not it's really best to be honest. They are teetering around with this curious thing. Their rejection level is honesty. Their social acceptance level is honesty. Get the idea? Their real rejection level is honesty. And their social acceptance level is honesty. So somebody comes along and has told them and taught them very carefully they must be honest, where actually they're all the factors in their case cause them to reject honesty. So you get a war, and you'll get a war in the individual. He'll go around puzzling about this, worrying about it, thinking about it. And most of the worries which a pre-clear comes to you with are these two worries. Social acceptance level, personal acceptance level, social rejection level, personal rejection level, at war. And those are the problems of the pre-clear. It really breaks down with great rapidity. The reason Freud could have so much fun in the second dynamic is because the society has more to repress on this than anything else. There are more vias put on the second dynamic, and the second dynamic is itself a via. Why, you just simply can't mock up another human being as... Well, I guess it makes a better game. Well, anyhow... Now, here is another word here, affinity. Affinity. It's one of the least understood of the three words, affinity, reality, and communication. Yet you'd better have some feeling about affinity. You'd better have some sense to affinity. Now, affinity is the consideration of the individual about the distance. And that is the definition of affinity. It's the consideration of the individual about the distance. That's all. I mean, there isn't any more to affinity than that. It's least understood of these things, mostly because it's so idiotically simple. And because it can get balled up. You realize that somebody appears who is dressed exactly like you, looks like you, talks like you, comes from the same part of the country, and you hate his guts. And yet he's making a perfect duplicate of you.
Over there.
You get the idea? So the reason you dislike him is because, if you do dislike him, the reason because you dislike him is because you consider that there's a distance. That's all. See, you just don't like that distance. All right, at the same time, somebody might have somebody walk up to him who's dressed like him, who thinks like him, who talks like him, and welcome him like a brother. You know, a wonderful guy. Terrific guy. I've seen this happen. I knew two Marines once who were exactly alike. And of course, being Marines, they did wear the same clothes. They didn't come from the same part of the country, but they talked more or less the same language. And these two boys were absolutely inseparable. They were just like twins. And I knew two others that were quite similar to each other who just hated each other's guts. The more distance between these two that hated each other, the better they liked it. See, this was gorgeous. I mean, what? You mean that guy's going to be shipped to Quantico now? Oh, that's wonderful. I'm over here on China Station. The further, the better. Whereas this other pair considered that if one of them had been shipped to Quantico, they would have been real upset. Get the idea? Yeah? It's the consideration about the distance. Now, reality takes the similarity into effect. The duplicate is taken into effect under reality. Agreement. See? Now, you have to have a consideration of whether an agreement is taking place or an overt act. So affinity is the consideration about the distance. Actually, all emotions and everything else are simply considerations. And there is no other thing than consideration. Come right down to it. Next time you see an art critic, please tell him so. He's trying to mathematically codify consideration. I'm sorry, but it can't be done. The acceptance level of art can change for a whole society. The Greek, for instance, wasn't it the Greek that had to have fat hips on a woman? And wasn't it some other period that the only beautiful woman was a pregnant one? When was that? 12th century? 14th. Something like that. 14th. Fantastic. But we wouldn't consider that the same way now. So we've had a consideration change on the part of the whole society. Well, who indoctrinated them this way in the first place? And we have merely social acceptance level. And social acceptance level can add up to acceptable art. But this doesn't make consideration any different than consideration. Just because a lot of people are considering a thing in one way really doesn't make it real, although it does, under R, make it real. Now, R is simply the agreement upon considerations. That's R. We had a lot of agreed upon considerations. We've got life. We've got reality. We've got walls and floors. And we have disagreed on considerations. Why, we don't have any masses or spaces. We have some that are orderly or arranged. If we have disagreed upon considerations, you know, nobody's agreeing upon these considerations at all. We have chaos, one kind or another, or we have no universe at all. We have to have agreement upon considerations before we can have anything. Scientology is the study of the agreement of considerations which has evolved into existence as we see it today. And that is the study in which we are engaged. We're studying the agreed upon considerations. And these agreed upon considerations, as listed, are the axioms. An axiom, then, is not a self-evident truth, as it says here in the next word or two. It is a self-evident agreement upon. It's just obvious that somebody must agree upon it. It's there, isn't it? Well, if it's there, then somebody agreed upon it, including the person who sees it. All right. The consideration of the distance is affinity. An ally You've been with us a long time. We don't use an ally very much today, but it's a nice thing to know that somebody is in somebody's valence. And the ally, the person he's likely to get, most likely to get into the valence of, is an ally. Now it says here that an ally is a person who is aided in the survival of the preclear under cramic or highly emotional circumstances, and whom the preclear reactively regards as important to his further survival. Very well stated. So true. The only trouble is with the ally computation, remember now, that the preclear reactively regards as important to his further survival. And because it's under engramic or highly emotional circumstances, you will find quite ordinarily that a person considers these allies to be allies until you process him. And then you'll become angry with them and become upset about them and so forth. He just goes uptone on them, and going uptone on an ally is uptone from an engram, which is pain and unconsciousness. And that's pretty low tone. So as he comes up, he will hit the whole emotional bank on the subject of this ally, and he will start hating him and reviling him, and then he'll get up to a point where he can take him and leave him alone. Now, the ally might have been actually repressive to the person's survival for his own good. So it doesn't mean that the person was nice to the person, you understand? It isn't necessarily true that this individual was nice to the person. An ally is simply somebody who is regarded as important to his further survival. And individuals will go into the valence of allies just to keep them around. The analytical mind is that part of a person's thinking machinery and memories over which he has relatively full control. Oh, that's a good first book definition, and perfectly good definition. But let's recognize something further here. The analytical mind can be defined much more sharply today. It's the Thetan plus his machines. That is the total of an analytical mind, and we can separate the Thetan from the analytical mind. There's no thinking machines left around. And the second there's no thinking machines left around, we no longer have an analytical mind. We have a Thetan capable of consideration. Many qualities, but no thinking machinery. He can remember without a machine. Analytical mind interposes the idea of a machine. The idea of a computer, a computation, of automatic memory banks and so forth, of analysis of data to summate into conclusions. Well, anytime you have an analysis of data, you've got an analysis of experience, which is an analysis of past. And that's a machine, because a Thetan does not need an analysis of past in order to think. All he needs to do is predict. He can take a no at the environment. You see, he doesn't take a look at the environment. He takes a no at the environment and predicts its state. That's the way he thinks. The second he begins drawing up things from the past and past experience, we've got a banker, or we've got a government, or we've got something else, or we've got an electronic computer up at MIT, or we have an analytical mind. See? And that definition is imposed by the words themselves, analytical, which means analysis. It would be a mind which did analysis, and it analyzes via machinery. We understood this very clearly back in 1950, that the analytical mind was something which was capable of sane conclusions based upon rational experience. So an analytical mind is that part of a person's thinking machinery and memories. Get that? And memories. See? Memories, past. Memories are part of this analytical mind, over which he has relatively full control. But that isn't the way a Thetan thinks. And if you've still come up from book one thinking a Thetan thinks that way, he doesn't. He takes a no at the environment and predicts. For instance, as I sit here, I can't tell you why. Because there is no why to tell you about. But I can tell you that certain events will transpire on certain days and hours of the coming 6 months. Now, this is very easily dragged down scale to crystal ball reading or something like that. I first encountered this as an analyzable, observable, demonstrable phenomena in the field of navigation. I could look in at a navigating machine and know whether it was right or wrong. And I thought, this is real peculiar. That's a machine, and machines are right. And yet I know whether that machine is right or wrong. And I puzzled this for some time. This was on expeditions where I had a lot of fancy equipment to measure things for the hydrographic office and so on. Came the war, and I didn't have time to navigate. I used to bawl out the assistant navigator or something or other, why don't you get the right latitude and longitude, for God's sakes? You haven't even been near the nav shack. See, we weren't in the right position according to his piece of paper. How did you know that? Well, you just knew it, you see. But how did you know it? Why did you figure that out that way? Well, I didn't figure it out. I just know we're not in that position, and that's all there is to it. And this drove me to despair because it drove other people to despair. Here was this phenomenon, not in the field of crystal ball reading, but being applied to life and death, you might say. So very, and therefore open to question on the part of people in the immediate environment. And I knew I'd been doing this for a long time, but I didn't know how. I thought there had to be a how to it. And the more I worried about there being a how to it, why, the less I did it. You get the idea? If you could be totally relaxed about existence and not worried about it at all, you would know what the president was going to have for dinner in August. That's right. If you could just be totally relaxed about it. If there was nothing you were trying to prevent, if there was nothing you were trying to vigorously and violently effect, you see, you could really relax about this. For instance, I tell the boys around here once in a while, well, such and so, or that's a bad deal, and they say, how do you know? Because you haven't read the dispatches on it yet. Well, they no longer tell me that. They never longer say to me, well, you haven't read the dispatches yet, or you didn't know. I say, well, that'll wind up in a bum beef. That's no good. So on. Because I had to redevelop the faculty with the first foundation. Any one of you has the same faculty. It's only when you think you had better depend on it in order to survive that you lose it. See, if it's not important, if it's not an important part of your survival, you can always do it. So we have this interesting trick. The early foundation, where I was teaching about 8 hours a day and evening and morning, and I was trying to get stuff written and had all even, I was even buying the desks and renting the typewriters and so forth, mostly because we were moving a little bit above the speed of most of the people around. They couldn't get up to speed on it, and it all would have fallen in on our heads if we hadn't gotten up to speed. So anyhow, I had to redevelop this faculty. But because it was desperate, for a little while, the faculty took a steep dive and went out of sight. I'm very well acquainted with this particular phenomenon. Very, very well, intimately acquainted with it. I've had people stand around and tell me that this could not possibly be true, that such a phenomenon could not exist, and boy, as the track unreeled, it certainly was true that these people did not mean me any good. You get the idea. If they could just knock down your ability to predict in this wise, they could knock your survival and luck to pieces. And this is luck. The faculty known as luck is the ability to predict. When an individual depends utterly upon luck without predicting, he's going to be failed. But if he is relaxed about winning the poker game, he will win. You get the idea? Why does he win? Well, it's because he's so relaxed that he predicts whether his hand is the winning hand or not. He doesn't try to read it from the faces of his fellow players. It doesn't matter. It's not on their faces anyhow. I've gotten so I don't play cards anymore for an entirely different reason. It's just too much restraint to stay 3 feet back of your own head. It is. It's just too much restraint. Now, When you start to analyze a situation, then you are giving over your own basic power to predict. Because you can know the situation and know its future without analysis. And one of the most wearisome things there is to explain to somebody in accounting or someplace how he should keep an accurate record of finances, when you yourself know whether the organization will be broke or solvent at what date. And when the government comes in and tells you that you must keep an accurate record, you know that you're only keeping it for the government. Now, you can then know whether or not you should spend or not spend, and so change the future. Whether or not you have to get wildly active in order to alter the future, because the odd part of it is the future is alterable by the individual. The future is alterable by the individual, and this is what makes this also confusing. You know exactly how things are going to be if you keep right on sitting there. Then you know how things are going to be if you act in direction A, and then you know how things will be if you act in direction B. But you've got 100,000 directions that you could act in life. Well, so therefore, you would have 100,000 conditions to be predicted, couldn't you? And so you get an evolvement which can be very easily explained by memory, experience, analysis, and prediction. And memory, analysis, experience, and prediction is a very lame and involved explanation for the ability to predict. Because the only thing you have is the ability to predict. And the more vias of how you predict you put on the line, the worse off you're going to be. You know, it's an old saw that somebody reading the crystal ball for somebody else or telling the cards for somebody else will eventually lose that faculty. You know that old saw?
I heard it's for money.
And it's also for money. That gives it stress, you see. But the crystal ball, the deck of cards, are the via which enter the aberration. So if you're ever going to go into mind reading, for sport or otherwise, just simply pass your hands magically through the air to attract the attention of the person whose mind you're going to read, and get a dreamy expression on your face if you feel dramatic, and give them the future. Don't tell it off a deck of cards or out of a crystal ball. You don't need either the deck of cards or crystal ball. If you use them, remember, you don't need them. You don't want them. Curious. Very curious thing. The easiest thing in the world to understand is thinking, if you don't try to get yourself involved in the factors of memory and experience and computation. The psycho is up there in the psycho ward because he's tried to compute the future too long. Now, this mustn't happen again. It's the most revelatory process that you ever wanted to run on anybody. He's trying to prevent things from happening. In other words, he's holding on to experience so as to change the future. There's no reason why he should do this at all. He should be able to tell at any given moment what tire of his car is going flat. He doesn't have to recall a facsimile or hold on to a facsimile of tires going flat to know a tire can go flat. As you come up scale and exteriorize and so on, you find yourself dealing with this. And the only reason it ever falls downscale is the introduction of a via and gets to be an analytical mind is because you rig up a computer. That computer will always fail. Well, that's a long way from lecturing, telling you how to crystal gaze. But the odd part of it is, instead of a wild, unheard of, or strange activity, it's the woof and warp of existence for a Thetan. Crystal ball reading. Oh, I must tell you that one day I had a big chronometer case under my desk on the USS Algol, and I had taken the chronometer out and put it down in my room because the quartermaster kept winding it at odd moments and so forth. And so I took this out of the case, and it left part of my chart table with a big glass covered compartment in it. So I got a goldfish bowl. And sure, one day, and I'm out of the goldfish bowl on a little velvet pad. And, it made a very, very pretty little crystal ball. It was down underneath there. And this was my big gag, you know. And one day, the admiral of the transport division with which we were working came aboard, and he walked in. He asked me how things were going and what kind of navigational equipment us guys had these days. Of course, he was interested because he's an old-time navigator, and we did have lots of new equipment. And I showed him around, and then I said, of course, this is my best equipment, and took him over to the chart table and showed him this gag, you know. He looked down through this, and he saw this crystal ball sitting there on a black velvet pad. And he says, fine. Went off to the chart room. A little while later, the captain came in, absolutely bursting with laughter. The admiral had come up and reported me for using crystal balls in navigation. I never knew how dumb you could get, but that was pretty dumb. I guess you have to be that dumb to get to be an admiral, but it wasn't a joke at all. Well, maybe the admiral had a lot of experience, too, you know. I suppose this is all very logical. Well, you guys certainly don't know how upset anyone would be if you failed to know what ARC was. If you didn't know what ARC was, everybody would be real upset. And that tells you where the center of this science is. If you look all the way down the list and found the one people would be the most upset about, if you didn't know, you would have the middle of Scientology, wouldn't you? And so you have the ARC triangle, which was developed in July of 1950. I developed the first two parts of it, C and R, I think they were. No, they were A and R. And gave a lecture on it as A and R, and then all of a sudden hit C. Some such combination, and there was this triangle. Now, about 2 months after that, did a paper, which has not survived, unfortunately, because I'll never do it again, which extrapolates ARC into mathematics and demonstrates that mathematics cannot exist in the absence of any one of the factors, and that a mathematical formula must contain A, and it must contain R, and it must contain C in order to be mathematics. All mathematics is therefore derivable from ARC, which is a cute little stunt, but more important. Not any long bow. I mean, it's unswervably true that ARC, affinity, reality, and communication are the basic and component parts of mathematics, and there are no other. All you're trying to get is the agreement amongst factors. All you're trying to do is communicate from one mind to another. Notice one of those logics in AP and A. Mathematics is a servo mechanism of the mind, or mind servo mechanism of mathematics. It only communicates those formulas. And as far as A is concerned, we're just measuring the relative quality of similarity. There was much more to this, but the fact of the matter is that understanding, mathematics, reason, all these things are in the same basket. And we got the oddity right there in, I think it was September of 1950, that these three things composed understanding. These are the three component parts of understanding. And when we have raised these three parts, we have raised somebody's understanding. Now, actually, your understanding has raised enormously, I am sure. Although it hasn't been tested, wouldn't have to be, simply by running communication processing. That's what's peculiar. Communication processing, by the way, on one of its early tests under its original investigation, was demonstrating this continually, that it was raising the prediction quality of the preclear, the very factor I was just talking to you about. You kept running communication processing, nothing more than that, and all of a sudden this individual was predicting better. If you want to know what permits an individual to predict, it would be raising his ability to communicate. Of course, then he could take a no at the environment and could communicate it into the future. All right. The other data here, similarly, has use. But behind each one of these, there is a considerable amount of understanding. We have the auditor's code today, 1954, as a much more meaningful thing than it was in 1950, much more important. We have the axioms today as much more meaningful than those which were written in late 1951. We have barrier as being a very specialized definition. Most people consider a barrier a wall or something of the sort, but a barrier would be space, energy, matter, or time. If you don't know that a barrier could be space, energy, matter, or time, you might get confused as to how a trap is put together. A very good dissertation on this, as far as the written works on this subject concerned, the best dissertation is in Dynamics 1955 on barriers, called entrapment. Boyloff is very, very unimportant, but you better know what it is. For instance, I was quite pleased to find the boys in the auditor conference that takes place at 5 o'clock every day. All of them just chorused. The fellow said, I kept getting dopey, I don't know what is wrong. This was a young auditor, he had just been trained. And these other boys had been trained way on back, and they looked at him, and I said, go on. I said, tell him what causes a boil off, and they said, it's just too continuous a flow in one direction, it's just a one-way flow. And so they all were very startled with him because he didn't know this. And I just told him to reverse the flow right where he was sitting, and he only did it for a moment or two, and he became quite alert. That's all a boil off is. It's a flow flowing too long. Actually, you could talk yourself into, or I could talk myself into, an unconsciousness if we never got an acknowledgement. It wouldn't happen if we were completing cycles of communication. Even if we were completing one cycle of communication, it wouldn't happen. But with no acknowledgement, you generally will find yourself getting groggier and groggier and groggier. You go down scale, and you want to know why people aren't as alert in this universe as they could be, or what awareness is. It is simply a lack of complete two-way communication, you see? And this all by itself would cause boil-off on a gradient scale, which is a person's just boiled off just so far that he is Homo sapiens. He's only boiling off to that point. Or he's boiling off until he's completely unconscious. The reactive mind could be said to be something that is boiling off all the time in complete unconsciousness, you see. But nevertheless, articulate once in a while. See, if you get a reverse flow once in a while, it'll wake it up a tiny little bit. If you look at this thing called boil-off, you'll understand an awful lot about man. Well, we could cover these axioms and definitions in tremendous detail, and I won't do so with you. But I may possibly have shown you, just by the verbiage I was giving you, I might have shown you a tiny little point or two that might help clarify some of these things today. Thank you very much.